The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Warning, each episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast will contain descriptions of acts of violence or of a sexual nature and are for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off the internet or from some television show. These facts I'm retelling were presented to me by the victims of the crime or the perpetrators who committed the crimes. My descriptions of the crime scenes are what I saw with my own two eyes. If you are going to get offended, turn this podcast off now. Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. And as always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. Before I begin today's episode, I want to talk to you about another true crime podcast, and it's called Murder-ish, and its host is Jamie Rice. We met Jamie at CrimeCon, and she was super cool, right? We took photographs together, but I was actually introduced to her podcast by the host of Minds of Madness, Tyler Allen. He recommended her to me, and my wife and I got to listen to it before we went to CrimeCon, and we both liked it a lot. Very well done. The stories are top notch. The investigative work and reporting are top notch. And you need to give it a listen if you like true crime. That's well done. So I want to introduce you to Jamie now. Jamie Rice from Murderish.
Hi, I'm Jamie, host of Murderish, a true crime podcast that provides a 3D look at gripping murder cases from beginning to end. You'll get to know the victims and perpetrators, how their worlds collided, and what went down during trial. I also share some of my own personal experiences, like the time a stranger came into my bedroom at night. Yeah, that really happened, and I walk you through all the details of that terrifying night. Have you ever wanted to be a fly on the wall during a murder trial? You'll get that opportunity on Murderish, as I share my experience being a jury foreman on a first-degree murder trial. Search Murderish in your favorite podcatcher app, hit subscribe, and start binging. And remember, listening to this podcast doesn't make you a murderer. It just means you're murder-ish.
All right, y'all. It's Jamie from Murderish. Give it a listen. You won't be disappointed. And check out all her social media, etc. And when you do, and you like it, then let them know that Woody from Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast sent you. All right. Today's episode is titled Ice Cold Killer. In 2004, after becoming a detective with the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office, as I've told you in previous episodes, when everybody would leave and I was a rookie detective, I would stay behind and read the cold case files. And one of the ones I read was from 1988. And the reason this case stuck in my mind is because of the brutality of it. Now, in 1988, they didn't have digital cameras. It was the old film, and most of them were in black and white. They had some that were in color. But I remember going to this case file and looking at it and being like, holy shit. And it was just horrendous. The victim evidently had been robbed, and her vehicle had been robbed, and her personal items stolen, her jewelry and purse, and a 380 semi-automatic pistol, which her fiance had given her, was missing. But what happened was she was found out in the woods on a piece of property that her and her fiance had purchased together, and they had planned on clearing it and putting a house trailer on it so they could move out of their parents' place when they got married the next year. But they had to have it cleared first before they could put a trailer on it. And her body was found brutally murdered, raped, head caved in, the whole nine yards. But anyway, so I started looking at it, and the lead detective on the case was Mr. Kearney Foster. Now, at that time, Kearney Foster was my chief of detectives. Actually, he was more like the chief of operations. He was number two for the sheriff's office, and he had been there for 30 plus years. And I had, and I still do have, mad respect for Mr. Kearney. He had forgotten more about law enforcement than I'll ever know if I lived to be 110. But I love to watch him work. One of the first murder trials I watched was him testifying on the stand on a case that he had worked previously. And I'm just absolutely in awe of the way that he works the jury and works the courtroom, et cetera. And I gleaned a lot of information from him on that. But also, he was over me when I was in uniform patrol. I mean, he was over everything to do with the criminal side of the sheriff's office. So I came up, and a lot of people thought he was too much of a hard ass or whatever, and he would call you on the carpet, as we say. You get called on the carpet, it means you're going to stand in front of your boss and get your ass chewed. And you mess up, sure, he's going to let you know about it, right? And there were many, many Monday mornings after working, Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights, that I would just leave my phone on because I knew somebody was going to be calling in and filing some kind of complaint on me. And I was no stranger to the carpet in front of Mr. Kearney's desk, I can tell you that. But I learned a lot from him. He never chewed my ass without teaching me or giving me constructive criticism or a lot of times attaboys, and just mad respect for him. So I read that file, and I remember just talking to him about it one day in his office. I don't remember how it came up. Somebody got murdered in the same area. It might have been the Christopher Pell case. But anyway, we got to talking about it, and he said, you know, there's one from Walker. That's what it was. We were talking about how few murders Walker had in X amount of years. And he was like, well, let me tell you about one in 1988. And when he started talking about it, I was like, Mr. Kearney, I read that file. And I said, that's some bad shit. He was like, yeah, he said it's one of the worst that I ever had to work, you know. And he said, I sure would love to close it before I retire. He told me, he said, I had my main suspect, and I interviewed him many, many times. I couldn't get off of him as suspect because I couldn't prove he didn't do it. He said, but there was always talk of the victim being seen talking to a white male outside of a laundromat in Walker on the day that she went missing. So I'm going to give you the backgrounds on the case now. On April the 4th, 1988, Charlotte Sowerwin and Vince Lejeune were living together, and they got into a fight not a physical altercation, but they got into a fight over money because she wanted to hurry up and get the piece of property they had bought cleared. And her fiance, Lejeune, would spend money on other stuff, right? I think it was going to cost like $1,300 to have the lot cleared. They had like $900 saved up, and he had gone out and bought something for his motorbike or something like that, and she was pissed. And so they got into an argument about it, and she told him, you know what, don't even worry about it. I met somebody, and we're going to go look at the property tomorrow, and he's going to cut me a deal on having it cleared. And he said that they argued the night, and the next day when he left, he didn't even think he told her goodbye or that he loved her. So he goes to work, and he comes home that evening, and her vehicle's not there, and she's not there. And he notices that her purse isn't there. And he had bought her a 380 semi-automatic pistol for protection, and she didn't like it. He said she was afraid of the gun. She had accidentally discharged it once in the residence and shot a hole in the floor, right? She pretty much was scared of it. But when he saw that the pistol wasn't on the counter, it was like, that struck him as kind of strange. And they thought, well, she's going to meet this strange guy. Maybe she took it for protection. So it's dark. She's not home, and he's worried about her. And finally, he's like, well, let me go out to the property and see if she's out there. That's where she said she was going to meet the guy. And in 1988, there were no cell phones. And if you had one, it was one of those gigantic bag phones, and you had to be a lawyer or a doctor or something, right? So he drives to the remote location, and as he's pulling up, he sees her car. He gets out, walks up to the car, and looks in the windows, and he sees the stereo's been ripped out, and the speakers are gone. And he's like, he just knew something was wrong, at least that the vehicle had been burglarized. And he said that he opened the trunk of the vehicle just in case somebody had stuffed her in the trunk. And she wasn't in there, and he saw a vehicle pass on the road. And so he jumps in his truck to try to hurry up and catch the vehicle, which ended up pulling into a driveway just a little bit further down the road. But in his haste to back out, he hit her car with his truck. And then he went down the road and screams at the guy, call the law, something's wrong here. And so the neighbor did. He called, and the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office responded. And they arrived on the scene, and Charlotte wasn't anywhere by the car. So they began to search the property, and they made Lejeune stay towards the front of the property. And then detectives had to be called out, and it turned into a bit of a show, if you will. But somebody called, Lejeune's parents came out, and Charlotte's family came out. And so they couldn't let him into the search area, and it went on into the night. Mr. Kearney said it lasted like 2 a.m. Then they found Charlotte's body. The photographs that I saw, whomever did it, had tied a rope around her neck and dragged her into the woods and beat her, caved in, basically smashed in the side of her face, and raped her. It was bad. So when they come out and they tell Lejeune that she's dead, they found her. He was trying to get to the body, and they had to restrain him, just a bunch of stuff. And he's not even thinking at this time that, you know what, I'm the one who is the fiance and all this, that, you know, the law enforcement's going to come look at me as a suspect, because he's like, I didn't have anything to do with it, right? But law enforcement always starts with a couple of things. It looks at the people that are closest to the victim, and of course, naturally, who finds the body or reports it. So they worked it, and
It's springtime, boys. The grass is green, the birds are chirping, and the kids will be out of school soon. That makes it the perfect time to plan a family vacation. And we know from the stories we cover that this is not exactly the time to take the family to the Caribbean. You don't want to end up in the middle of some cartel drug shootout. So this year, it's time to take an international journey. And of course, a big international trip is just one reason to learn a new language with Rosetta Stone. You might have a different one. Maybe you want to connect with family or friends living overseas. Maybe you want to acquire a new skill for work or better understand a certain culture. Rosetta Stone has helped me have fun with my mother and at least have partial conversations in Italian after only a few lessons.
Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and many more. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. Intuitive process, you pick up a language naturally, designed for long-term retention. Speech recognition, the true accent feature is like having a personal trainer for your accent. Rosetta Stone is convenient and an amazing value.
That's right, Woody. A lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Real Life Real Crime and Daily Show listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Sayonara. Do you guys know what May 12th is? Sunday, May 12th?
Mama's Day.
That would be correct. It's Mother's Day. So let me ask you, do you basically get your mom the same gift every year for Mother's Day? Maybe some flowers, some chocolates, maybe a robe or a framed photo, boring stuff, right?
Right.
Well, let me tell you about something that's totally cool and different from Mother's Day that will never wilt, spoil, or put an extra 10 pounds around her waist. I'm talking about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty unique. Cool, right?
Right.
Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. Your mom can either type a response to the email or she can record her voice if she prefers to do that, or she can do both. And MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book as well as an audiobook. And if you want, and she's up to the task technically, you know, the audiobook is a great extra thing to be able to do. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and your future generations can treasure. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is kind of your chance to give her a way to share them. Every family's a little bit different, and in my family, we love to give each other a really hard time. So I've taken the approach in doing this of asking my mom to comment on some of those family moments that might be a bit embarrassing to other family members. Last week, my question was, Mom, did you feel guilty that day you hit me over the head with your wooden clog and Dad had to take me to the hospital for 8 stitches? Mom's response, back in the day, I was the disciplinarian of the house. And when you were 8 years old, you refused to get out of Nancy's, that's my sister's, plastic kiddie pool. I told you 10 times to get out of the damn pool. You didn't listen, so I chased you around the yard. And when you slipped, I nailed you right on the head. That was the last time you got in that kiddie pool. Of course, Dad had to lie to the ER and tell him that that you fell on your head, but I nailed you good. The entire process with My Life in a Book is simple, and in the end, Mom will have a great keepsake that can remain in your family for generations.
Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC for 10% off today.
Witnesses saw Charlotte talking to a white male outside the laundromat in Walker during the day. And that's the last reported sighting of her alive. And Lejeune told the detectives, one is Mr. Kearney, my chief, that they had argued. I mean, he was honest with him. He told him everything I told you, that they had argued the night before and all this. One, he's not thinking, holy shit, that they're not going to find who did this or what have you, and they're going to start looking at me as a suspect. But they did. I mean, Mr. Kearney and them could not exclude him. And when you can't exclude someone like that, you have to keep pursuing it. And of course, you're going to look into other leads, but there was nothing. It was ghost. I mean, it was just pure horror. And as time went on and the years passed and time passed, Mr. Kearney never gave up. He said he would go back and question him again and again, but he never had enough to charge Lejeune with the murder of Charlotte. Now, Lejeune also always cooperated and would come in, et cetera. The bad thing was Walker was so small and everybody thought Lejeune killed her. And it was just, I mean, I can't imagine that shit for him. I mean, I feel bad for him, but I absolutely would have done the same thing if I was Mr. Kearney on pursuing the guy until I could get off of him. So I get that standpoint. But let me tell you what really happened, okay? And to say that I'm going to be shortening up this guy's story is an understatement. But Roy Allen Melanson, and that's a good, strong Cajun name. It's spelled M-E-L-A-N-C-O-N. Was born February the 13th, 1937 in New Iberia, Louisiana. I affectionately refer to it as the Berry. It's in the heart of Cajun country. Have a lot of history there. And you just don't get any more Cajun than that. And his father was an oil field worker, and they moved between Louisiana and Texas. But it didn't take long, right? And I don't know juvenile records or whatever, but I know when he turned 17 years old, he was arrested for the first time in Corpus Christi, Texas, for impersonating a federal officer and fraud. And he was sentenced to a 2-year prison sentence, but the judge suspended it and said he had to be on probation. Well, think about how it was back then, y'all. You have different jurisdictions. They don't have any way to communicate with each other. They don't have the computer systems. They don't have the NCIC computer or any way to really correlate any crimes that go on or anything like that in the county over or the next parish over, much less in that state. So if you get somebody that's a true good bad guy and then he's traveling and he does bad things, it'd be hard to catch him. So he's sentenced to 2 years on probation, and he doesn't even make it like not even a year, and he gets arrested in Louisiana for burglary. He's sentenced in 1956 to the 4 years for the burglary and theft, and he's sentenced to Angola. And just over a year later, in January the 7th of 1958, he got parole from Angola. Then he goes back to Texas, and he gets locked up in 1960, is given a 2-year sentence for burglary in Orange County, Texas. In Orange County and Corpus Christi, this is all relative, right? It's all the oil field areas, and it's real close to the Louisiana border. But he gets out in 1961. He served 13 months. He gets out, and lo and behold, he rapes a lady in Jefferson County, Texas. And they couldn't stick it to him, right? So, and then 1974, he rapes a second woman in Texas, and he's not charged with it yet. And then in July of 1974, in Napa, California, Anita Andrews is found dead inside of Fagini's bar. I'm going to come back to that. And then 1 month later, in August of 1974, Michelle Wallace, who was a beautiful young lady, gives Melanson a ride near Schofield Park, Colorado. 3 days later, her parents report her missing. A couple weeks later, in September, Melanson is arrested for fraud, writing bad checks, and breaking into a car in Schofield Park, Colorado, where he is being developed as the lead suspect in the disappearance of Wallace. March 1975, he's extradited back to Texas to stand trial for one of his rapes. Now, y'all, I ended up doing some research on this one because I found it so interesting. But man, the victims gave the details of the rape. This is not a one and done rape. He tortured his victims. I mean, he would keep them for like days and days and stuff. But one of them, he just raped her repeatedly, and he even showed her his driver's license, and she ended up talking to him and talking him out of killing her and making like she was his friend, and he ends up letting her go. And so this is the one that comes back to bite him. But the other rape victims, the same thing. I mean, it's just violent choking. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to fuck you. I'm going to kill you and strangle, whatever. It's just torturing them mentally and physically. So at the end of that trial, and again, I'm summarizing things, y'all. End of that trial, he's convicted and received a life sentence. Okay. Later on, the state of Texas fucked up and they reduced the life sentence. Now, remember, Michelle Wallace went missing in Colorado in 74, and Melanson is the lead suspect in it. and they had never found her body. But in July of 1979, a hiker found two ponytails or hair that was consistent with the way that Michelle wore hers. And Melanson does his time, and his sentence is reduced. And March 23rd, 1988, he is released. Okay. April 5th, 1988 is when Charlotte was murdered outside of Walker. Moving on Melanson's history. May 15th, which just over a month after Charlotte was murdered, Melanson gets arrested in Kentucky on being a convicted felon in possession of a firearm. Guess what kind of firearm it was? A semi-automatic 380 pistol. And the numbers were filed down on it. So when Charlotte was murdered, Lejeune had the numbers, the serial numbers for the firearm, and they were entered into the NCIC database. But when the authorities in Kentucky ran this pistol, evidently the numbers were filed down enough where they misread at least one of them. So when they entered it into the system, it doesn't come back as stolen out of Louisiana. Or they could have tied him in, or he would have been developed as a suspect in Charlotte's case then. So what else is happening in this time, y'all? 1991, DNA is becoming available to test and is being proven in criminal cases. And guess what? August 2nd, 1991, DNA is more prevalent, right? It's being proven, it's being used, and the authorities in Colorado got hair samples from Michelle Wallace's hairbrush from her family, and they were able to positively identify and match the hair braids that the hiker had found in Colorado to Michelle Wallace. We know she's deceased. And I know it's a lot of dates, but just bear with me. It needs to be told. November 6, 1991, Melanson got released from the Kentucky prison. January 1992, a couple months later, he is arrested again in Kentucky and convicted on a burglary and some other charges. August, 8 months later, Michelle Wallace's body is found in 1992. So they had developed Melanson as a suspect through a whole bunch of evidence, but they just never had enough to put him away until her body was found. They didn't want to try him without a body. And back then, you just didn't do that. No body, no murder. I mean, nowadays, people get convicted all the time off of circumstantial evidence, et cetera. So anyway, so Colorado authorities bring Melanson back out, put him on trial for prison, and he gets convicted, and he's sentenced to life in prison in Colorado. During one of the prison transfers in Colorado in 2003, authorities took a DNA sample from Melanson and they entered it into the CODIS database. In November 2009, the DNA comes back as a match to Miss Andrews, who was the one I told you was found murdered in Napa, California. So he ends up getting prosecuted for that lady's murder also. Now, what's going on in Livingston Parish and what's had transpired to bring Melanson or have evidence retested, etc.? Well, as I told you in the Screwdriver Red series, Mark Lewis, when we did him on the DNA for Janet Benoit's 16-year-old cold case, Stan Carpenter, who is now the chief of detectives, Mr. Kearney retired, I think, in 2006 or 2007. It must have been 2006 because I'm still there. Stan Carpenter, super duper leader and investigator, just like on the Janet Benoit case. He's thinking, well, shit, if Mark Lewis did Janet Benoit and is 16 years old, let's submit all the evidence we can from all the cold cases. And so they went through file by file. You have to remember on these really ice cold cases, they weren't looking for DNA back then. When they collected evidence, they collected it by chance. And on Charlotte's, Sauron's murder case, they were able to collect a semen sample from her clothing. And the only way they found that was by using the blue light, right? So they didn't know about the DNA was going to come out years later, but they took that sample and thank God that they did. And somehow it survived all these years in evidence and it was submitted. And the thought probably was going to be that it was going to be Screwdriver Red that did her. But it comes back that it was Melosa. And so when Stan Carpenter gets the call from the State Police Crime Lab, again, he's smart. Just like he did on Janet Benoit, he got the call from the State Police Crime Lab that they had Lewis. He didn't just rush off and do him right. They worked the case and found the weapon that Lewis used, etc. Stan plays it this way on the Melanson case. And because, I mean, when they pull this dude's rap sheet, it's longer than fuck. I mean, he's killed, I don't know how many people, and raped a whole bunch more. So what they did when they found out he was arrested in Kentucky with a .380 firearm, they talked to people. Detective Ben Bourgeois, who I told y'all about in Screwdriver Red, who's now the chief of detectives since Stan retired. Ben was kind of Stan's protege, if you will. Super smart, great detective. So they talked to witnesses in Kentucky, and guess what? The witnesses in Kentucky, after all these years, were able to give a description that matched the description that was given of the white male that Charlotte Saurin was talking to outside the laundromat on April 5th, 1988, the day she was discovered murdered. That, with the fact that the pistol ultimately ended up being Charlotte's pistol. So, I mean, they got a lot now, right?
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Right. So they fly out to Colorado and go to interview him. And they're trying to talk to him and trying to get past his Miranda rights or whatever. And he's like, man, fuck y'all. I got detectives coming from all over the country trying to pin every murder case in the world on me. But I think he did say he had never even been like to Livingston or to Walker and had met this girl. And then when they say, oh, you know what? We got your DNA, bitch. And he's like, well, fuck you. If you got my DNA, go get a warrant. And they said, okay. And we'll be back with one. And so ultimately, they got a warrant for Melanson's arrest for first degree murder for Charlotte Saurin for the robbery and rape. Because remember, he burglarized the vehicle, he stole her purse and the firearm. So they just an amazing, amazing cold case. And that's ice cold case from an ice cold killer. This guy's rap sheet in the story is unbelievable. I hadn't thought about it in many, many years. And I was reading yesterday in our Real Life, Real Crime friends, fans, and crew private page. And we have a lady who's a Dream Team moderator, Karen Ortolano, and she does research. And every day she's posting about a different crime. And she had posted about this case and shit. I don't know where I was or what I was doing, because normally I watch the news every day, the local news. But when this broke, I'd have just missed it. I mean, and otherwise I certainly would have remembered it. But Karen posted in the group and I'm like, I'm reading it with my morning coffee. I'm like, holy fuck. I can't believe this. I remember talking to Curry about it. I vividly, vividly remember the crime scene photographs. Just horrible what he did to it. And I remember currently talking about Vince Lejeune and how he stayed on him all those years. And Vince Lejeune never moved from Walker, Louisiana, which, like I said, at that time, I think it was like 3,000 people. And he was a suspect, and everybody in the town thought he was a killer. I mean, he had a hard life. Still worked in the oil field industry, but he had been married several times and long time battles and with drug addiction, et cetera. And he said that he was drinking beer outside his house one night after all those years, 25 years later, and he get a call, and one of them says, "Hey, there's a Stan Carpenter on the phone for you from the sheriff's office." And he's like, I know what this is about. And then, you know, and he gets on the phone, and Stan tells him, "Hey, I need you to come in tomorrow. There's been a break in Charlotte's case." And he thinks he's going to get in, be questioned again. But you know what? Dude knew in his heart of hearts he didn't do it, right? So he goes in, and guess what? Charlotte's sister is in the office waiting with him. And Stan was able to break it to him about the DNA and Melanson. Guaranteed killer, and that they had warrants for his arrest and everything. So, and Lejeune said that he cried, and this sister, Charlotte's sister, I mean, they had a lot of animosity and didn't hold back on Lejeune from telling them what they thought over the years, et cetera. But rightfully so. I mean, if it was my family member or yours, you'd probably do the same thing, but the poor bastard. And so just got to give a kudos to Stan Carpenter and Ben Bourgeois, and we're closing that case out. And that's a case where that's not only a cold case, it's an ice cold case. And from an ice cold killer. I mean, this dude, if you get a chance, if you just Google him, and I don't like to do the Google stuff, right? I like to tell my own stuff, but his shit is so bad. In so long, it will blow your mind. Roy Allen Melanson. Look it up. You won't be disappointed. And it was way too much. I could have done a 10-part series on this guy, but he's been done before, y'all, on Investigation Discovery about the Michelle Wallace case. And I actually remember watching that and thinking how strange it was they found ponytails, right, with the braids in it after all the years. But I didn't know about all the other killings and when he started out. And of course, I didn't know poor Charlotte Sauerin's murder and all that. But anyway, interesting. And I hope you enjoyed it. There's also a book called Smooth Talker, Trail of Death, and it's by Steve Jackson, and he covers it in detail. I just glanced at a couple of things in it. So if you want to learn more about Roy Melanson, who I call an ice cold killer, because he's just the way he did his victims. And I don't know if I told y'all, I'm gonna go back to it. Charlotte Sauerin's, not only did he beat her and cave her head and rape her, he also slit her throat. And the book has a lot of harrowing details that Steve Jackson puts in there that he got from the victims of the rapes that lived. So just an interesting case from a criminal mind standpoint. And so that's Steve Jackson and the Smooth Talker. And the Smooth Talker part is because his whole deal, Roy Melanson, through his whole life and how he got his victims, he was smooth and charming, and he just had the gift of gab, and he would lie to him and tell him anything that they want to hear to put him at ease, et cetera. And he did some sick shit. Wrap this episode up now. And I appreciate you listening. And, you know, I love and each and every one of you. But I'm going to tell you one more thing before we go. And it's about another podcast and another great guy that I got to meet at CrimeCon. And his name's Robin Warder, W-A-R-D-E-R. And he hosts a podcast, The Trail Went Cold. And I was thinking about him today. All his cases, all his episodes are about unsolved crimes and murders, et cetera. And that's every detective or investigator's worst fear, right? To have the trail go cold on you. And so I think it's fitting to end today's episode with The Trail Went Cold and introduce you to Robin Warder, because if you like cold cases, this guy's like the king of them. So let me introduce you to Robin Warder with The Trail Went Cold.
Hello, everyone. This is Robin Warder, host of the true crime podcast, The Trail Went Cold. If you grew up watching the classic television show Unsolved Mysteries, then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I profile a new unsolved murder or missing persons case and share all the baffling details. Afterward, I provide my own personal analysis and theories about what might have happened. This is a show for true crime buffs who are fascinated by cold cases and love to discuss them and pick them apart in an attempt to figure out the truth. So be sure to check out our podcast to learn about some truly bizarre unsolved mysteries where the trail went cold.
All right, y'all, that's The Trail Went Cold, the podcast. Check it out. You like it, and I know you will. Go to social media and let them know that Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast sent you. And with that, I'm going to give a couple of shout-outs and announcements. First of all, I want to say thank you, and I love and appreciate each and every one of you fans. We are over 110,000 downloads. I think last week when I recorded, we were at 90. So we're growing phenomenally. Appreciate you. Continue to ask that you like and share, subscribe to Real Life, Real Crime. And I mean, y'all are doing it already. Our numbers don't lie. And I appreciate it. And you know what? Somebody had put a comment about me talking about the numbers and the growth of the show and whatever, like a negative comment. Well, whoever you are, sorry. We'll have to agree to disagree, or you can kiss my ass because it's my show and I'm showing my appreciations for my fans. And we had a discussion at CrimeCon and since of about the diehard Real Life, Real Crime fans, and we're going to call them lifers. So lifers, it's a playoff of course, Real Life, Real Crime. And then lifers being we're down for life, right? So lifers, I want to tell you how much I really appreciate you. And for every one negative comment, there's 100 positive ones and people just showing the love for the show, sending me messages, sending stuff. It's just crazy. But I love and appreciate each and every one of you. Y'all, we've had a lot of requests for the shirts that either have Murder by You on the back or Sugar Turn to Shit or He Ran Like a Little Bitch. Or the opening line of the song, I don't want no sugar in my coffee, Lord, it makes me mean. So we have all those available for purchase now. So check it out at rlrcpodcast.com. And my patron members, love you. Appreciate you. We couldn't do it without you. And with that, I'm going to give a couple shout outs to our newest patron members. We have Miss Ashley Falcon, whose charge is disturbing the peace. Ashley, I really do appreciate you, sweetheart. It means a lot. Thank you so much. And then we have Jenny, no last name, whose charge is vandalism. And Jenny, like from Forrest Gump, right? Jenny, I appreciate you. I appreciate you taking the time to subscribe and be a lifer. And Mr. Dan Clark's charge is disturbing the peace. And Dan, I appreciate you being a lifer. I appreciate you supporting me and the podcast. It's awesome. Thank you so much. And Miss Andrea Stoner, your charge is vandalism, Andrea. And I appreciate you for being a lifer and supporting the podcast. And I love it, love it, love it. I love all y'all, all you patron members. And we can get back into the list next week. But we are in the process of putting up the full bonus episode for the tiers that qualify for it. And it's a real son of a bitch, this story is. And so I'm probably going to catch some flack for it, but it's a true story. So that'll be, y'all have that before you actually hear this episode on Friday. You'll have that, patron members. And I appreciate you. And this is the least I can do bonus wise for y'all. But thank you all the fans and just love it. Love it, love it, love it, and love everything that you do, and love all the support, and we're excited to start season two, and I just happened across this case by chance. And so there's no 911 call, unfortunately, from 1988, but it's an interesting case and I hope you enjoyed it. And we love y'all. Check us out on our social medias, the Facebook pages and Twitter and Instagram and YouTube and, you know, our three Facebook pages. I think about to hit 1200 members in the Real Life, Real Crime friends, fans, and crew page. So all you lifers out there, I love you and I appreciate you. And until next time or ever, don't let me catch you down on Murder Bayou. Peace.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.